This is Ringler Radio, where you get all the latest news and information about structured settlements from experts across the U.S. Ringler Associates, celebrating 35 years of successfully helping injured people and their families. Ringler Radio is made possible in part by the life markets that issue structured settlement annuities, including Allstate, American General, Liberty Life, MetLife, New York Life, John Hancock, and Prudential. Now join Ringler Radio host Larry Cohen.
Well, welcome to Ringler Radio, everyone. I'm Larry Cohen, head of Ringler Associates Northeast Operations, and we're certainly glad you could join us again today. Well, today on Ringler Radio, we're going to be discussing the importance of having a settlement broker present during mediation. And I know all of you out there who have been involved in mediations know how important that can be. And joining us in that discussion is my fellow Ringler associate, Greg Pollux. Greg is our associate heading up the Great Lakes office, which, Greg, I kind of think is kind of a fancy way to say Detroit, if you want to know the truth. But I know you also handle not just Michigan, but also many parts of Ohio. So you and your folks are up in that Midwest area and doing great work. Greg has over 34 years of combined experience in the structured settlements arena, claims management, and financial services. So, Greg, welcome to Ringler Radio.
Larry, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Great. And also joining us today is our special guest, Richard Kaufman from the law firm Zosmer, Kaufman, August, Caldwell, and Taylor from Farmington Hills, Michigan. Rick Kaufman has joined the firm as a shareholder after serving as the general manager and general counsel of the Suburban Mobility Authority for Regional Transportation, which, Rick, I know has to be shortened to the word SMART. Am I right?
You got that right.
Super. Well, prior to that, Rick was one of the most respected judges in the state of Michigan. He spent 15 years on the bench of the Wayne County Circuit Court, 8 as chief judge. In addition to practicing law, Mr. Kaufman acts as a facilitator in approximately 500 cases a year. That's quite a docket for you. Welcome to Ringler Radio, Rick.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Rick, one thing I did want to say is before we went on the air, you mentioned you attended the University of Michigan, and I just wanted to say that my UConn Huskies are going to be playing your Wolverines on Labor Day weekend, so it's going to be quite a day.
And I wish I could say I was confident of victory.
Well, it should be an exciting time for us to go up to that big house. Rick, you've seen two sides of dispute resolution. You've seen courtroom trials, and you've seen private mediations. So let's get right to it. Are there advantages to mediation over litigation?
Well, there's certainly advantages to mediation over taking a case all the way through litigation. But I kind of view mediation as a part of the litigation process. Mm-hmm. And what I find most important is the timing of when you can get the parties to participate in the mediation process.
Okay, how does that happen? Typically, how does the mediation process get accelerated in your view?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and I think it really brings to the forefront the importance of mediation. And if mediation is important, all the tools one can use, like structured settlements, to make mediation more effective become really important. For decades and decades, about the same percentage of cases that are filed have gone to trial, mm-hmm. which means about the same percentage of cases settle that have been filed for decades and decades. What makes mediation so important is, can you, through this process, get a case to settle earlier than it might otherwise have settled, save both sides hundreds of thousands of dollars, save the emotional turmoil of having to go through a process we call the litigation process that can be very hard on everybody involved. And mediation, timed as best as possible, serves such a wonderful purpose in getting those cases that are likely to resolve anyway, resolved a lot sooner, which has tremendous advantages for all involved.
And Rick, when you're at the mediation, there's a couple of things, and of course, for the audience, I've worked with Rick extensively, and I think that there's so many ingredients to make a good mediator or facilitator, and I think Rick possesses those things, and paramount is his understanding of the law and the parties. You have sort of an opening statement, and I think an introduction process that I like, so that if I'm participating as a broker, you put me in a position right away where everybody understands what I'm there for, whether I'm there with as a defense broker or if there's another plaintiff broker that is there. I mean, I think that you identify that. And I'd like for you to talk about how you handle that situation in terms of your utilization of a broker during the process.
Yeah, well, I view a mediation from start to finish as how many different opportunities can I create to persuade? Starting from the beginning to have the parties together with some opening comments to give them a feel for the importance of the process, the opportunity it presents, the tools that are available here for their advantage, so that they understand that we're treating them importantly, we're treating them with respect, and we brought a lot of smart people whose agenda it is to try to let them understand the advantages available by resolving the case so that they're ready to listen. A lot of times you got to get someone in a position to listen before they can hear.
No question about that. You know, some lawyers debate whether they want the structured settlement broker to be in the room at the opening session, and when they should actually be involved in the mediation at all. Some people, they come later. What's your view on using the structured settlement broker during the mediation? When do you like to see that person be there?
I think it's very helpful to have them there from the beginning. There's no set rule for all cases, but most of the cases that Greg and I have worked on together are often multi-million dollar cases in which the plaintiff, who is usually not as sophisticated as the lawyers or Greg or other people involved, don't really know too much about the benefits of a structured settlement. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the plaintiff's attorney has done a poor job, if no job, of starting the education process. So you can't just go to the end and say, believe me, trust me, this is what works best for you. One is because they don't necessarily believe you. And two, it is the whole process of educating them through what I think is a very effective team effort that Greg and I have used over the past that allows us to not only let them see the advantages, but helps us resolve the case in a manner that works for everybody.
You know, something that I have taken from the evolution of working with you for so many years is the focus that you put on changing the atmosphere of negotiations. And so many times, the early negotiation sessions come out to be, even on the large cases or ones of catastrophic injury over a long period of time, there's usually this period of, we got to start getting the parties a little closer together. So we start out a lot of times in this cash mode, which both Judge Kaufman and I agree, you've got to get the parties narrowed up a little bit. And it's almost, and I don't want to speak for you, Rick, I'd like you to comment on this, but we almost try to push the parties to somewhat of an impasse and then change the atmosphere. And I'd like to have you tell the audience how you do that and then how you interact with the plaintiff. I think that's really compelling for resolution.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in what you say, and I think within that, it's what we have recognized over the years in doing so many of this mediation, is that you really have more than two interests represented at a mediation. Even if there's only two parties, you've got the defendant's interest, you got the defense counsel's interest, you got the plaintiff's attorney's interest, and you got the plaintiff's interest, and those are four, at a minimum, slightly different interests, and at times, very divergent interests. And to be sensitive to what is important to each one of at least those four different interests, and to use the tools available when you're trying to deal with one or the other, which is effective to get that entity on your side, is really important. And I think that relates to what you're talking about. Plaintiff's attorneys, there's a lot of good ones, a lot of them with good hearts, a lot of them ethical, but the reality is their first interest is how much of a settlement am I going to be able to get in present value or cost, mm-hmm. and I get a third attorney's fee off that. until you get the plaintiff's attorney's interest to think there's a possibility that how he views this case is such that he can get a fee that's within the realm of what he thinks is reasonable given his view of the case, you're going to have a hard time keeping his attention, and I need to get his attention first so that I can squirrel my way into the room with his client to try to work on his client to potentially do something maybe different than what he wants.
I think that's a good point. I see this an awful lot too, and I agree with you, Greg and Rick, that and I do the same thing when I'm in mediations. I encourage cash to be the element in the early part of the session, and until parties are comfortable with it, with some kind of an impasse. I've always thought that when you, on the first shot out of the barrel, if you give a structure, they're so focused on the small nature of the offer that the structure is meaningless and doesn't have the kind of value that you would have later on.
See, Larry, I think you're right on the point here. It loses the impact to change the dynamic of the negotiation.
Exactly.
We're just so far apart many times, which is the purpose that Judge Kaufman is there, is to get these parties together. And when we get to this point where maybe it's a case that has a total value of $1.5 million, well, all of a sudden when you get to, you're making these cash offers, man, maybe you worked your way up now to $750 or $800, but then all of a sudden you put together a structure that may be worth $900 or $1 million, and now you got $500,000 in cash and you have all these benefits. What we found to be extremely helpful is that all of a sudden now in that room, here is Judge Kaufman as the mediator talking directly with the plaintiff, mm-hmm. and with, you know, plaintiff's approval, even if there's a plaintiff broker there, and we're changing the dynamic. And now we've shown an income stream that makes a difference in their life, and that changes the opportunity, I think, from the standoffish nature of both sides negotiating to all of a sudden, well, maybe there's some commonality and there's something here that will work for all parties.
No question about it. I think you're on the right track, both of you, and I see every reason why you guys are successful. Let's talk about something else. Now, brokers, Rick, play a big role in all of this at mediation or even prior to mediation. A lot of times we're reviewing life care plans. We're getting substandard age ratings. We're doing a lot of the grunt work to set the stage for the ability to make offers that are meaningful and attractive. Talk about the role of the broker in helping you resolve these cases with these kinds of functions that they play.
The broker can be such an extremely valuable asset to me in trying to help me persuade the plaintiff to take something less than maybe even his attorney is recommending. And some of the important things is to explain to them what age rating means, how you can take an advantage through age rating that you can't receive if you just receive a lump settlement, the tax advantages, and to let them understand that by having a stream of payments the rest of their life, they are not only going to be comfortable to know this is coming, but it takes away the very difficult job that even us people who think we're smart have in trying to determine how to invest their money.
You know, Larry, another thing that I've found in working with Judge Kaufman is that when you go into a settlement for the first time, there is a great deal of information that you don't know. Now, if there is a plaintiff broker there, they have access to this information, but many times there's not. In a lot of situations that Judge Kaufman and I work, there is not. So, but I'm very well known by the people that I work with and very well accepted by both sides. But I'm at a loss for having the key information sometimes to draft that proposal. I think many times life care plans can be strictly positional in terms of trial. Well, we're going to, plaintiff writes a very large one, the defense writes a real small one. And sometimes that's not the answer to the question. So, you know, Rick will say to me, he'll say, look, what do you need to know? I said, well, you know, what's the Social Security disability? What's the living arrangements? Were they getting Medicaid benefits? You know, do we have a lien? And a mediator now becomes this tremendous source of information, which allows the broker to draft a much better proposal that has a greater chance of going through the checklist, taking care of all the needs that the plaintiff may have. So that mediator is a key person in providing that information when he's working in tandem with the broker. And I think that that is a real positive area for facilitations or mediations. That sometimes I feel some mediators don't embrace the resource, the asset that is in front of them. And I'm paying compliments to Judge Kaufman, but we understand each other.
Keep them coming.
Yeah. Greg, you're saying exactly the way I feel as well. And I think what it all comes down to when you look at it, you know, rise above it and look down, it all comes down to the skill of the mediator and the skill of the broker. Because you can have a very effective mediator that's a fact gatherer and trying to go in there and get that information. But if the broker isn't skilled in trying to put together the right plan and to use persuasion to try to make it happen, you may not get success. And at the same time, you can have a very good broker and a mediator that's totally focused on something else and not really in sync. You need both on the same page. It sounds like you both are on the same page, and that's terrific.
I believe we are, and I so heartily concur in what you're saying, because I think it's so important to view each case individually, to try to determine the individual circumstances of a plaintiff. Some of the ones that Greg mentioned: are their children, how old are they, do they have assets to take care of a disabled child until their majority? So many things you want to know about. And during the beginning part of a mediation, where we're trying to get the plaintiff's attorney engaged by him seeing he can make a good fee on this case, I'm also gathering personal information about the plaintiffs to feed back to Greg. So when we do get to the point where we're finally going to have a proposal that includes the structure, Greg has gotten information to design it in a way that I can present it either by myself or with him in a way that has already taken into consideration things plaintiffs have told us about what's important to them. And it's fun sometimes to see their eyes light up when all of a sudden they see answers to the things they've just expressed a few minutes ago.
Well, Rick, how often do you encourage or take Greg into the other room to actually sit down across the table from the plaintiffs and have a back and forth? Do you do that?
Often. Sometimes I have to balance it somewhat, because mm-hmm. Greg is brought to the facilitation by the defendants.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you got to do what you can to make sure that they believe what they're getting is coming from a neutral person.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way Greg handles himself and his just amazing knowledge in all the areas that one needs in order to craft a structure, I will often, as I am making progress with plaintiffs, often encourage them if they have questions that I think I have an answer to, and know that Greg might even have a better answer, suggest that they allow Greg to come in the room, and either Greg by himself with the plaintiffs or Greg with me with plaintiff's attorneys and the plaintiffs will then have a discussion. And the longer you can have these discussions about things that are of concern to the plaintiff, the more you build this momentum this momentum towards resolving the case that somehow takes cases where there's a gap and has the gap go away.
And you know what? You're using Greg as a resource. And I think when I'm in mediation, and I'll tell a mediator at the introduction session early on to recognize, and they often say, Larry's going to be here. He's here for the structured settlement portion. He's here to, you know, et cetera, trying to explain it. And he'll also say, and he can be a valuable resource as we go through the day, as issues arise around this that he's got knowledge about. And we may use him during the course of the day. He may be putting in some structured settlement examples to you as we move forward during the day, so that it's not a surprise that the resource element is then, you know, triggered later on in the process.
Yeah, I have often referred to Greg as my adjunct facilitator, but so far he's not asked for any of my fees.
Great.
You know, Larry, I think it was last year during, you know, I did the Ringler University talk, and then my topic was on mediation, and I really encouraged the audience, you know, to make sure that if you don't know the mediator, where, I mean, I tend to run in the same circles and everybody knows me, but when you get into that situation where this is a new mediator, you don't know, try to establish a relationship. Go to that person. Talk to that person. I always tell everybody, you know, arrive 15 minutes early if you can, and just try to give him an overview so that he understands there are tools at his disposal, and you are there to be an assistant to him during that process. And one other thing I'd like to say, when people ask you, attorneys will say, or claims people, or even a plaintiff attorney, say, well, tell me what I can get for $1 million. I want to see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that of all the times I will write a quote prior to a mediation and then get to a mediation and get input from the mediator, I would say 85% of the time my quote changes because of the new information.
Sure.
That the mediator has provided for me.
Sure, no question about it. You know, it's a very fluid process, and you have to be able to not only have the technology, the computer and the printer and all that to make that happen, but, you know, the ability to bob and weave as that new information comes up to be able to react to it. And I agree with you. Those brokers that come with pre-printed proposals and they present them as if they meet the needs of the other side, oftentimes get disappointed.
Yeah, that's why Greg forced me to give him my code to the printer in our office.
Well, you know what? That's a smart thing to do.
Well, actually, Larry, I was really trying to get his Social Security number. See if I could hack him.
Well, we'll see what we can do about that. Well, let's take a quick break right now and come back in a minute with some more of this interesting discussion with Rick Kaufman and Greg Pollux. We'll be right back.
This is Ringler Radio from Ringler Associates. Quite simply, the undisputed leader in structured settlements for 35 years. Ringler Radio is celebrating its 6th year right here on the Legal Talk Network, produced by broadcast professionals. Ringler Associates, the only broker you need. Listen to all the Ringler Radio shows. Just go to ringlerassociates.com or legaltalknetwork.com and click on Ringler Radio and choose a topic. Since 1975, Ringler Associates has provided the finest structured settlement services to all parties involved in the settling of physical injury claims. Experience counts. Over 23 billion in structures benefiting 166,000 injured individuals and their families. And one of the few companies that truly enjoys the trust of all parties in the settlement process. Did you know you can download Ringler Radio to your iPod? Just go to iTunes and subscribe to the Legal Talk Network. It's free. We invite you to listen to other shows on the Legal Talk Network. It's free at www.legaltalknetwork.com. Did you know Ringler Radio is one of the top 3 rated shows in iTunes? Thanks to all of our listeners who download all the Ringler Radio shows.
It's the office calling again.
Don't answer it.
Why not?
I'm listening to Legal Talk Network podcasts to get my CLE credit in West Legal Ed Center.
Oh, yeah. I need to do that, too. Where do I find them?
It's easy. Just go to LegalTalkNetwork.com and pick a program for CLE, click on it, and start listening. Or go to WestLegalEdCenter.com and choose from any of the Legal Talk Network programs available for CLE.
That's perfect. The office can wait.
Welcome back to Ringler Radio. Again, glad you joined us. And I'm joined here by my colleague, Greg Pollux, from the state of Michigan and also a little part of Ohio, and with Judge Richard Kaufman from the law firm of Zosmer, Kaufman, August, Caldwell, and Taylor from Farmington Hills, Michigan. Rick is, as you know, in the mediation field. At the end of most mediations, there is a document. A lot of mediators put together a document which memorializes the settlement. And sometimes people use it for psychological reasons, others as a binding document. Tell me about how you work on that closing document, especially in light of some of these new Medicare rules that are coming out and causing quite a bit of stir.
Yeah, Larry, I think it's important to have a document that people sign that's binding, that reflects the settlement. A lot of emotions occur during a mediation, and whatever people's motivations are for coming to a decision, if it resolves the case, you want to make sure that second thoughts later don't result in problems. So I'm a strong believer in creating a document, a short settlement memo that is signed by the attorneys and by the plaintiff that is a binding agreement.
And I'm sure you often have parties inserting certain statements or elements, whether it has to do with liens or even you know, the use of certain life companies if there's an annuity. I mean, some of that language gets put in, and you all negotiate that at the end. Isn't that? It's not just a boilerplate form, am
very,
I right?
Very common for my secretary to say, Rick, you got another change?
Exactly.
I may go back and forth 20 times before we work out the language of something that is just the settlement memo, because the attorneys recognize this as a binding document. Now, the last paragraph of my standard settlement memo says the parties will in good faith cooperate in the drafting and execution of the final settlement documents, and there are further final settlement documents, but if there's a disagreement, the document I create is sufficient for a binding settlement.
Well, and I can be sure that Greg agrees with this, that oftentimes the fact that in that document it says that a portion will be structured, or that certain life companies will be used, is extremely important as the plaintiff goes back home and his brother-in-law and his financial guy starts to chat with him, that at least those things that are in that document help control how that case is eventually going to get resolved.
You know, I think it is important, and this goes back, I think, to the integrity of both the process and the mediator. We had, actually, Rick and I had a case one time where I did a lot of work on it. I mean, Rick acknowledged how much work I did. And at the end, the plaintiff wanted to do something a little different. And Rick stood up for me. He said, you know, that's really not right. Here's the person that did the research, got the age ratings, put together the plans that your clients liked. It was the most competitive price. So Rick actually had an evolution of his form to make sure that, look, if this person is there, he's entitled as a part of the process to write it and getting all parties to agree to that. Clearly, if there's a plaintiff broker and a defense broker, we get together on what's going to be, how it's going to be handled. But
right.
When I'm the sole broker and I've been accepted by the sides, then it does go in the agreement. And I think that makes for a much cleaner document. After, there's no digging around trying to find something else. They work with you, and it makes the process move faster and the document process a lot quicker.
No question about that. I think that's important. Rick, speak a little bit about the effect on the mediation process of the new Medicare rules. I mean, a lot of these Medicare rules, a lot of the carriers are concerned about having certain language put into documents to protect their interests. Everybody's a little bit uptight about it. And even, you know, I know Medicare is not even sure what they're doing. But has that changed the way you approach some of these cases as you get to the end of the day?
Absolutely. And with these new rules, which we don't totally understand their impact and what the requirements are, defendants, I think, have become rightfully concerned to make sure that if they're paying money to settle a case, that they settled the case completely and they don't have to worry about Medicare or Medicaid coming back at them for more money. So what I used to use was just a general provision that made it clear that plaintiff was responsible for any and all liens and it was their duty to hold the defendant harmless. I now almost always add a provision that goes into detail about if there's a Medicare or Medicaid lien, the plaintiff has to determine what the full amount of the lien is, that the plaintiff is going to have to escrow the full amount of the lien, and if the plaintiff works out a discount from Medicare or Medicaid, they can then use the escrowed amount to pay that, have to satisfy the defendant, all that's been done, and Medicare or Medicaid have been completely satisfied. And defendants, I think, rightfully, are no longer usually satisfied with the general language I used to use.
Right. I think that's absolutely true. What about this one other issue? Oftentimes, and this is historic, this goes back years and years, where there was a little bit of concern by the plaintiffs as to whether they were actually getting the cost of the actual proposal, whether things were being presented in the proper way. It's really the credibility of the process. So when you go into the other room with these proposals, I would assume that you're expressing the cost of the proposal to the plaintiffs as well as the benefits. Is that right?
I certainly am. And I'm not sure if you're asking this, but present value and cost are not always the same. Present value is a concept that so few really totally understand. And oftentimes when you have a plaintiff who is significantly ratable, there is a large difference between what the cost of an annuity is and what the present value would be if that plaintiff had a normal life expectancy. And these are sometimes complicated issues that you need to maintain your credibility on.
No question about it. I think the word credibility is the key to all of this process. As long as you can stay true to the process, it can get done, and it can get done in the right way. And Greg, you know, we've all represented as brokers clients, insurance clients who come in at times and try to mandate that a structure be done versus try to make the process work in its normal course of events during the day. How do you deal with that, Greg, when a client says, we're going to mandate this as we walk in that room, we're going to make sure that they must take a structure? And Rick, talk about whether or not that is helpful to the process, or does it cause people's antenna to go up?
Well, let me speak first. What I try to do in that situation, and that can be emotionally driven as well. Mm-hmm. If sometimes the individual claim rep just thinks it's the best thing since sliced bread, they feel that that's the right thing to do. And then you also have sometimes the company they work for, the insurance company, saying we mandate this because for premium issues where it goes back to their own life company. What I try to do is talk about the process. Again, the settlement is a process, and there's an evolution to every settlement. And the timing, getting back to the things that we said earlier, when you use it, when you don't use it, and then if you get to that point of resistance at the end, you probably are going to cost yourself some money, in speaking with a claim rep, if you're trying to force this on someone. And I think that then that transference to Rick is the mediator now trying to deal with it on the plaintiff side. He's doing just the opposite usually. But it's pretty disruptive when you try to make it mandatory. You know, there's a time for it, and there's a time that it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, in my experience is those times when the defendant, or more precisely the insurance carrier, is mandating a use of a structure for part of the settlement, it is an effort for them to make money on the structure. And if you flesh it out and say, well, they're not going to accept a structure from you that's not competitive in the marketplace, and if you're looking to sell them a structure that's not, you're really not offering what you say you're offering. So bringing a little truth to the process oftentimes can get rid of the requirement.
Well, I know it's a balancing act as we go through these mediations. It's almost like a kabuki dance from time to time. but somehow it works. The process works. When you have skilled brokers, skilled mediators, and plaintiffs and defendants that want to resolve cases, it's a terrific way to do it, and hopefully it'll go on for quite some time. Well, Rick, if someone wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Well, I got a phone number here in my office in Farmington Hills. It's 248-851-4111.
Great. And Greg, how about you?
My Detroit number is 248-643-4877, and my direct extension is 201.
Great.
And one additional thing, too, yeah. Larry, and this is actually as it relates to Rick. We tend to focus on a lot of personal injury cases. I mean, yes, there are some comp cases that we deal with and a lot of bodily injury cases. But one other thing about Judge Kaufman that maybe the audience doesn't know, and that is if you have complex business litigation, I think he really has proven himself the go-to man. Part of his experience on the bench, but also his years at SMART, has really helped him ascertain a better dimension for any kind of a corporate dispute And I know personally that you've had some, Rick, that you worked on for days and weeks. But that's a piece of litigation that's huge. It's emerging. And I think to find a qualified mediator in that field is very difficult, because most mediators can work in between the numbers. Okay, your demand's 500, your offer is 100. But when you get into this complex litigation, especially in the corporate of a business nature, you need somebody that understands this. And I can say that when I do medical malpractice, Judge Kaufman understands it. He understands the liability, the proximate cause, what a jury may do, and he's better equipped to help everybody in that room pound out what's going to work for everybody. And again, that's why I enjoy working with him, doing what I do as a part of the process.
And structures and annuities can also play an important role in helping resolve business litigation.
No question about it. Well, I do want to say, Greg, that's quite a testimonial to Rick's ability. And I know it's very sincere. So, Rick, you should feel good about what you've done up there in Michigan. Obviously,
I do, and I appreciate it.
You're doing the right thing. Well, I just want to tell all of our listeners that you can reach Greg or any of our Ringler Associates on ringlerassociates.com. And you can certainly listen to all the Ringler radio shows, this one included, on ringlerassociates.com. Or you can get them from legaltalknetwork.com. You can actually download them from iTunes onto your iPod. And, Rick, that means you can walk around town listening all day long.
Sounds great.
Well, Rick, thank you. Greg, again, thank you. And all of you out there who are listening, thanks for that. And go out now and have a great day.
The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Legal Talk Network, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer. Thanks for listening to Ringler Radio. In its 6th year on Legal Talk Network, with over 500,000 listeners, Ringler Associates, where experience counts. Since 1975, Ringler Associates has provided the finest structured settlement services to all parties involved in physical injury claims. Ringler Radio is made possible in part by the life markets that issue structured settlement annuities, including Allstate, American General, Liberty Life, MetLife, New York Life, John Hancock, and Prudential.